Next we have a very, very big group by the name of...
I like this company, dude.
Podcast on Music City Miracles. August has volunteered to undertake the recording and editing of the podcast from here on out, since we couldn't use Blog Talk Radio like we wanted to. So we're going to try this. So it won't be live, but we'll have the podcast, and then we'll start doing posts and stuff, asking for questions. And obviously we'll post it on the site, and so you can give us feedback that way as well. So August, thanks for doing that. How are you?
Doing pretty well. How are you doing today, Jamie?
Doing good, doing good. I think obviously we're in the middle of draft season right now. That's pretty much the only thing anybody's talking about. I think today we can probably just spend a little bit of time talking about different quarterbacks that we'll be looking at. I think we both agree that it's not very likely that either Blaine Gabbert or Cam Newton are on the board at 8. So in that situation, they probably take a defensive player. I know there's been some talk, and I think a lot of us would like to see them maybe take a receiver if A.J. Green or Julio Jones were available. Don't think they'll do that. I think they'll take a defensive player, and think we're looking at kind of that second group of quarterbacks, depending on how the end of the first round plays out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the best solution for the Titans, since it doesn't really look like there's that pro-ready, top-flight prospect like Andrew Luck everybody was hoping he would be, you know. At the top of this, like, if they can, you know, go especially towards defense, or, you know, a high-level playmaker like A.J. Green or something, and really kind of solidify the rest of the team, maybe give a quarterback some more weapons up front, and then in the second round they could get a guy who, you know, maybe can contribute next year a little bit, but who you're really looking to start, you know, the second or the third season. I think that's probably the best route for them right now. No, I mean, nobody's really expecting the Titans to gun for the playoffs or the Super Bowl next year. I think, you know, there are a lot of us who are very optimistic about that possibility. But, you know, realistically, it's not a great option. So it's best to just build the most sound team possible moving forward.
Yeah, and so we're probably, and we've talked about this before, but one of the more interesting things about this draft is going to be watching how the picks after 8, you know, from 9 to 38, 39, how those picks play out. Because, I mean, if what we talked about happens, if they either they don't take a quarterback with the first pick, we'll say that, then a lot of it's going to be about how many quarterbacks get picked between, you know, the Titans' first pick and the Titans' second pick. Because, you know, you're looking at, I guess, what you would consider the second tier of quarterbacks. I mean, I think pretty much anybody you look at has Gabbert and Newton as tier one, and then tier two is kind of a whole group of guys: Ryan Mallett, Jake Locker,
yeah,
Andy Dalton, Ponder, you know, all those guys that I guess Colin Kaepernick, whatever, however you say his name, has creeped into that group as well. You know, and I think different people, different analysts have all those guys ranked differently and probably have them valued, I mean, even as far as round-wise, differently. But that's the group that the Titans will be looking at. And, I mean, really, as a Titans fan, you need to hope that more picks can go by without anybody taking a quarterback after the Titans pick, because you want – I mean, we don't know who they like best among that group. So you obviously want to see those guys stay on the board as long as possible, so that when the Titans – when it's their turn to pick, that they'll have – the pick they want of that group.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to watch how the draft kind of unfolds, especially in that second round, where if you see a team or two trade up into the late first round to go after, say, a Ponder or a Kaepernick or a Dalton, somebody who's supposed to kind of start, you know, there's a very good chance there's going to be a run on quarterbacks right there. The best case scenario for the Titans is that it doesn't start until you get to, say, the Bengals, so that maybe only one or two of that second tier go in front of them. But they could really be put in a tight spot if somebody like the Bengals or you know, somebody else that's a little bit ahead of them kind of jumps up and gets that run started early. Because you don't, I mean, I personally don't want them to get stuck with, say, like, you know, Kaepernick and Stanzi and Edelson or whatever that other guy's name is, or, you know, kind of the only guys left out of that second tier right there. I think we'd really be up a creek with that second pick. But, you know, if everything plays out our way, then you could also get to a point where you could have three or four guys who are very viable options right there in the second round without having to move up. Now, the other interesting part is this has really got the chance to be a different draft than anything Titans fans have seen before, because it's the first one post Jeff Fisher. It's the first one without Jeff Fisher or Floyd Reese being involved. And we saw the kind of guy they go after change a lot last year. And I think it'll be extremely interesting to see if that carries over into this year. You know, we keep hearing that Rustin Weber and Mike Reinfeld really have a lot more control over these kind of selections than they used to, and Weber especially. I think a lot of the change in going for, you know, high character, leadership, productive college player type guys last year came from Rustin Weber and what he liked to do, you know, somewhat with the Seahawks, and then really getting to do his own thing now. So, I mean, it could be really interesting, but it could also be dangerous because you're waiting in between that first and second pick, and you don't know when that run is going to start. And once it starts, if the Titans are really dedicated to getting somebody in the first two rounds, they might have to make that jump up. You know, is this front office going to be aggressive enough to do that? Or are they more so going to sit back and wait and let it unfold how it unfolds?
Yeah, because, I mean, when you stop and look at it, the teams that pick before the Titans in the first round, Carolina, Buffalo, Cincinnati, Arizona, San Francisco, all could reasonably want a quarterback. And I think that's really the main reason to me. I mean, that's what, five teams in the first, you know, in front of the Titans, so the first seven picks, that's five teams that have a need at quarterback, we'll say that. So odds are, you know, Cam Newton and Blaine Gabbert don't get out of that. But then when you look at it, I mean, four of those five teams pick before the Titans pick again in the second round. So let's say that, however it shakes out, let's say that Carolina and Buffalo both get their guy in the first round, then, you know, you've still got Cincinnati and Arizona in front of the Titans in the second round that are probably going to be looking quarterback. San Francisco doesn't pick in front of the Titans in the second round. But, I mean, there's a chance that you could see, really, if – I mean, you've got other teams like Minnesota, Jacksonville, Seattle, teams like that that are probably looking quarterback. But, I mean, there's a chance that you could see those – first two quarterbacks go in the first three or five picks, and then it'd be a long time before another quarterback gets picked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's good for the Titans, but at the same time, you could see three of those guys go in the second round before the Titans pick. So, I mean, I think the worst thing that could happen for the Titans would be Minnesota and Jacksonville both take quarterbacks in the first round, something like that, or, you know, Jacksonville, Seattle, whoever, two of those three teams take Locker and Mallett, whoever it is, off the board in the first round. And then, like you're saying, that's going to cause a run. These teams in the second round are going to get desperate to either get that guy with the second round pick or, like you were saying, move into the first round. And then you're like, it could end up with a scenario like you're talking about where you're sitting there looking at guys that you probably have a third round grade on coming in, and then you've either got to decide you're going to reach and get that guy or you're going to go somewhere else. And I mean, you know, suck for luck. Like I said earlier, I mean, I don't really know what happens in that situation. You got to hope that you get a veteran that can at least keep the wheels on for a year. So, you know, I said it before, and if you look at like the SB Nation, the mock draft that we've been doing, I mean, it's been 21 picks. I haven't looked at the picks that are posted today, but 21 picks, and there haven't been any quarterbacks selected. Well, actually, there's been three quarterbacks taken. Ponder was taken by Jacksonville 16, and then, of course, Gabbert and Cam Newton. So, I mean, I think that's probably a good way for it to play out for the Titans, but there's a very real possibility that even, like, when it comes into the second round, that they may need to pull the trigger on something to move up two or three spots to get ahead a couple of those teams if the guy that they want is still sitting there and they think that, I mean, you know, if they got him identified as the guy, they need to be willing to go up, even if it's just two or three picks they might have to do to get a shot at him, because he may not be sitting there after these teams that need quarterbacks pick.
Yeah, and I mean, the team that's really kind of sitting there, you know, in a golden spot are the Patriots with that second pick in the first round. I mean, I think that's where a team could really trade up and start a run on quarterbacks. And, you know, there's no telling who that would be, but they're, you know, they've made it pretty clear that they're cool with, you know, backing out of that spot. They've done it all the time before and trading for some picks in the future. So maybe that's someone the Titans, the Titans trade would say, you know, if Ponder falls to that point, maybe that's who Palmer loves, and they try and jump up there and get him.
I just think it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. That's to me is kind of the most fun storyline of this draft, especially for the Titans, because I mean, like I was saying earlier today, that Nick Fairley's going to the Titans in pretty much every mock draft now, which means that probably won't happen. But, you know, they're taking a defensive player there more than likely with that pick, and then just kind of wait and see how it plays out after that. When was the last time, have the Titans ever moved up in a draft? I mean, later rounds they have, but like in the first or second round, have they ever moved up? I can't remember.
I think they moved up for Eddie George.
Okay.
I think that was the last time they jumped up in the first round.
Gotcha.
Other than that, it's just been, you know, going back a few times, like when they got Troop and the year they got Roos and stuff, they moved back with the first couple picks.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. Like you said, I mean, this is the first time since they've been here, since the franchise has been here, that you haven't had either Jeff Fisher or Floyd Reese involved. So we could see a completely different strategy than what we've seen in the past. I think we both agree that Mike Reinfeldt had more say last year. I mean, they took a different type of player last year than they had the couple of years before that. That he had more say, which you would assume Jeff Fisher still had a pretty good amount of say in kind of draft strategy last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he definitely had some influence, even if it wasn't, you know, wasn't really even close to the kind of influence that he had before when, say, you know, he kind of forced Reese to go after Lindell instead of Devin Hester. Or, you know, there were several picks through the years where stories came out later about Fisher being the one who really signed off on it and wanted that guy. So,
yeah, like Pac-Man.
Yeah, Pac-Man, exactly. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how different this draft looks than some of the ones we've gotten in the past.
And, you know, I mean, we have a little bit of hope as far as that's concerned, at least the way the draft went down last year, just because watching them take guys that had, you know, high production levels in college, smart guys, and, you know, it paid off. I mean, they got a lot of contributions from guys early. And, you know, I think it says something when you talk about how good of a draft class it was, and you didn't have your first-round pick for the majority of the season because he was out with an injury. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that speaks volumes into how good this draft class was they had last year from top to bottom.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we've raved about that class since it came in, and if we can get Morgan back healthy and still, you know, playing it at the same level or better than he did and the limited action he saw in the beginning of the season, I mean, this team could take right off, especially because, you know, kind of transitioning into our next topic, you know, I think we've all looked at 3,000 mock drafts over the past couple weeks, and the one name you just see over and over and over again is Nick Fairley. And, you know, if you can put Morgan next to Fairley and then maybe still bring back Babin, and then you still got, you know, Jason Jones, all of a sudden a rotation of a limited Tony Brown, a Jason Jones, and a Cedric Marks, and Nick Fairley is a pretty good defensive tackle rotation. And you've got some ends, like in Jacob Ford, William Hayes, and Derek Morgan, who can really set the end, even if we don't end up bringing back Babin.
Yeah, so, I mean, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And that could go, I mean, because the thing we talked about, with the reason that Fairley makes so much sense there is because, more than anything else, this team needs a big defensive tackle because they were beat up so much last year. They need a guy that can come in there and provide what Washburn always called the big boy pass rush. I mean, that was kind of what Tony Brown's job was, and he just wasn't able to do it last year. And we talked about this too, but I mean, there's just no reason for me to believe that you're going to get much more out of Tony Brown this year than you did last year, considering he had already had a whole offseason to, you know, recover from the knee surgery. It just didn't get any better. So there's no doubt they need to add a guy with some bulk in there. And, you know, if they can get it with Fairley, and on Fairley real quickly, I mean, I wouldn't want him at one, especially if I was the Panthers. I'm not sure I'd want him in the top five if I was one of those teams. But, you know, at eight, there's just he's got such a high ceiling. I understand that there's a lot of room there for him to be a bust, and it's a one-year wonder, and how's he going to translate and all that kind of stuff. I mean, and those are all legitimate concerns that I understand. But when you've got a guy that has the potential to be as good as he does, and I mean as dominant as he was as a college player in a, you know, in the SEC, this is not in some, you know, Mickey Mouse conference last year, it would just be hard for me as a GM to pass on that. And, you know, with the idea in mind that, yeah, he could flame out. But, you know, if you hit on that, you have gotten a real steal even in the top eight picks in the draft.
Well, and he's a safer pick for us than he is for a lot of other teams because of Tracy Rocker.
That's true.
If Fairley falls to there and we end up taking him, I mean, you know, Tracy Rocker is the guy who really made him great. I think he knows that if he signs off on Nick Fairley, and then Nick Fairley comes in and just acts the fool and ends up flaming out in a couple years, where you basically get Albert Haynesworth without the complete dominance after a couple years, then, I mean, that's going to reflect poorly on him. I couldn't see Rocker signing off on that pick if so many of the character concerns and the motor concerns that some people have expressed with Fairley, you know, are really the case. I mean, sometimes, you know, that's just kind of draft subterfuge, and sometimes it's, you know, really is what's on the tape, or sometimes it's, you know, people just overplaying some of the bad points that are on tape. But, you know, if Rocker signs off on that pick and we end up taking him, you know, I think it could be absolutely amazing, the impact it could have on our defense.
And then kind of shifting gears back into the quarterbacks, something that you and I talked about saying that we think Gabbert and Newton are gone, there's a possibility that if the Titans were willing to trade into the first round, or even sitting there with that second pick, that they could be looking at Jake Locker and Ryan Mallett. Now, to get Locker, or they'd probably have to trade back into the first. I mean, I think that Locker goes in the first, and maybe Ryan Mallett does too. I don't know. But we have talked about it, and I've made my thoughts on Ryan Mallett clear on the blog. But I had asked you the other day if they were sitting there and they were looking at Locker versus Mallett, who you would prefer them take, and you said Mallett, and I say Locker. So I was going to say we could just maybe spend a couple minutes kind of debating that point on why we think that either guy is better. So if you want to start off kind of giving your case for Mallett over Locker.
Well, basically, for me, the case for Mallett comes from, you know, having watched the kid. He is probably the best natural passing prospect that I've seen in a good while, in my opinion. He throws an amazing deep ball. His fade routes and his corner routes are some of the best I've seen, even keeping pro quarterbacks into the conversation. You know, he's got great height. He doesn't have a lot of great mobility, but I don't really care about that. I think if the biggest thing you got to work on is moving a little better in the pocket, then you're already a lot farther along than most guys who are going to stand up and shake the commissioner's hand any draft day. So I would really rather take the chance on Mallett and hope that you can manage some of the character concerns. If it comes down to just those two, then get Locker, who's a guy who you really have to put a whole lot of work in, changing his fundamentals, changing his footwork, changing his release, working on all those things that you should be much further along by the time you get to the NFL. So, I mean, I would rather focus on a kid's psyche and hope that maybe those concerns are being a little overplayed, which there is talk that those things are being overplayed, than, you know, somebody who I just have a lot of doubts if he can be a quarterback, period.
Yeah, and I mean, those are all good points. I just think after seeing what we saw with Vince Young and the mental issues however you want to say that, I don't see why they would want to go down the road again of taking a quarterback with those type of concerns. They may be overblown, and there probably is some truth to that. I mean, it's kind of a rumor that's gained steam, but there's never really been anything to back it up. But it's coming from so many places that it's kind of hard to believe that there's not some truth to it. I don't know. His attitude just doesn't seem, I don't know, he doesn't seem like he's the guy that's willing to come in and sit down and put in the work like he was, like you need to do to be a good NFL quarterback. No doubt that, I mean, his arm is probably better than any quarterback in this draft, and like you said, probably better than a lot of guys that are in the league right now. But the concerns on the other hand, and the fact that he can't, I just don't think he can move it all in the pocket, and I think that he's just, I just think he's going to get killed like that. I like Locker from the standpoint of just the athleticism that he brings. You need to be able to keep some plays alive. You see how valuable that can be when that's just a part of your game, not when that's your whole game. I think Locker, I mean, from everything that I've heard, he was in a pro-style offense, so he's done that. He's willing to work. I think that the guys that have watched him at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, at his Pro Day, I mean, the one thing they said was he has shown progress each step of the way. So, yeah, he'd be a little bit of a project. But I just, for me, I don't want a guy that I have any concerns with when it comes to his character, his mental makeup, playing the quarterback position. I'm willing to step out a little bit further in other positions. But when it comes to quarterbacks, just like I said, after what's gone on with Vince, and not even that he's a bad person. I mean, I'm not talking about those type of character concerns. Just the mental makeup that you have to have, and the dedication that you have to being an NFL quarterback. And you know, we saw a guy that wasn't willing to put that work in. I just don't know that they'd want to go down that road. And, you know, some people say they don't care what a guy does off the field. And I get that to an extent, but not with a quarterback. We're talking about a quarterback. We're talking about a guy that needs to be in the facility all the time, needs to be putting in that work, that doesn't need to have those other distractions in his life that take away from him being the best possible quarterback he can be. And, you know, guy, you always point to guys like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. The other problem that I have with Ryan Mallett is that he really disappeared in big games. He put up some big numbers, but in games that they won pretty handily, but against the good defenses, he kind of disappeared, and he gets kind of erratic when he gets some pressure on him, and you know he's going to be seeing that pretty much every play in the NFL. So I think that he's a guy that we talk about it with like Nick Fairley. You talk about the ceiling. I mean, I think he's got a really high ceiling. I think he could be a really good quarterback. But I just, all the other questions surrounding him, and really mainly his off the field stuff, not as much as on the field stuff, would make me hesitant to take him to put my franchise on his back for him to be my franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true as far as the disappearing in big games. I mean, I think you could definitely make an argument for that on the Ohio State one. The other one that people seem to point to all the time is the second half against Alabama, which I'm going to take a wild guess that you watched.
Yeah.
And I'll say that I can't, and all the Alabama games I've watched over the past 2 years, I can't think of a single quarterback who was supposed to go out there and win the game for his team that didn't disappear for a half against that defense. You know, I mean, Alabama's defense just ridiculously overmatches everybody. They're pretty absurd. So, you know, I'll give him a little bit of a pass on that. But I mean, I just think he's so much more polished as far as his mechanics and his ability to deliver the ball than anyone else. I mean, when people talk about his arm, it's not like when Kyle Bowler came out and everybody was like, "Oh, he can throw it through the upright to one knee on the 50." And then when you get into the actual game, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's got a cannon in games and he can put it on a spot. He can throw with a lot of touch. And when you have both of those, I'm willing to overlook a lot of other things. Now, it's going to take a lot of investigating the character concerns and that sort of stuff. But if those do check out, if they're at least okay and not horrendous like they're made out to be a lot of the time, I would have to go Mallett over Locker if they're both sitting there.
And that's something that we hope, as you know, fans of the team, that the front office, the coaching staff, all those guys are doing that. That we always talk about due diligence. Mm-hmm. They're doing that homework to make sure that they understand how much of it's overblown, how much of it's true, you know, what they're dealing with when they pick a guy. Because I think that the biggest problem with the Pac-Man pick, you know, Jeff Fisher thought that he could handle Pac-Man. I mean, that's kind of been the line that we've been given, was he said, "I can handle him." And I think that maybe they just hadn't done enough investigation into his background. I think they saw, I guess, maybe the bar fight with a pull cue or whatever it was that he had in college. I think they just kind of looked at that and thought, okay, well, maybe it's an isolated incident, we can handle it, and instead of really digging into, you know, his past and why he did the things he did. So you hope, as a fan of the team, that if they do pick Ryan Mallett, you know, and it would be in the second round, if they do end up, you know, calling his name, that they have done all that and they feel confident that whatever it is, either overblown or stuff that he's, you know, worked through in his life and is not an issue anymore. I mean, that's really all we can do, is just bank on the fact that they've done that work and that they wouldn't be bringing this guy in to be their quarterback, especially if they hadn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, you know, we've seen character concerns really take center stage in the draft in general, but especially with quarterbacks. And, I mean, there's a good argument to be made. That's the reason there hasn't been a high-level bust in several years at the quarterback position. But, I mean, you know, even the stuff about Mallett that comes out isn't, I mean, it's generally not that criminal, other than the drug thing, which, I mean, nobody really knows whether or not to believe. But, I mean, it's not like there's a history of violence there. It's not like there's, you know, violence against women or domestic abuse charges or that kind of stuff. It's like, well, the guy parties a little too much, and maybe he's kind of a jerk to some of the people, you know, some of the people who work in the locker room, not necessarily other players, that kind of stuff, and that's kind of a turnoff. And if it's like that, then I think maybe we can deal with it. And just the fact that he's fallen out of the first round, if we're talking about him coming up to our second pick, you know, might send enough of a message. You know, it's a little difference if you're Pac-Man, or if you're Lawrence Phillips, or if you're, you know, some of those legendary head cases where you still get taken in the top 10 or in the top 15 it buys into that sense of entitlement that you can get away with whatever you want, as opposed to if you lose that $15, $20 million. Because if Mallett doesn't have the character concerns, he's the top prospect in the draft. And anybody, any of the talent evaluators that are saying otherwise are just lying to themselves. He would be the top quarterback prospect, easily a top three pick, no matter who was picking in that top three. But because of these character concerns, he's going to lose out on millions and millions of dollars, even if the rookie wage scale comes in. And so, you know, maybe that is sends him enough of the message of, hey, this kind of behavior is not acceptable in the NFL, and we're not going to put up with it.
Yeah, that is a really good point that some of that I hadn't thought about, is that he might either, whether he'd come in with a chip on his shoulder or come in without that sense of entitlement that being that high pick gives some guys sometimes. So, might be, and like you say, and I do agree on the point that he's definitely more, as a passer, he's more NFL ready than Jake Locker. I would feel more comfortable with him as a passer than Jake Locker. It's just all the other stuff that concerns me.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, like we said a million times, but they may not end up having a shot at either of these guys if they're not willing to come back up into the first round. Because I mean, when you look at it and you read mock drafts, they don't really mean anything. But a lot of times they do. The better ones give you a sense for how teams are thinking. They talk to the personnel guys and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So guys like McShay and Kiper, as ridiculous as they are sometimes, they generally have a pretty good sense for what teams are thinking. Now, they're not going to hit on a lot of their picks and that kind of stuff. I understand that. But, it looks to me like Locker is probably late first round. And then Ryan Mallett with this stuff, I mean, there's a chance that he could also be late first round, but you're looking early second. So, I mean, I think it's a realistic possibility that the Titans could their second pick could come up with him on the board. And, again, we just got to hope that they've done all that research and they know what they're getting. And if they think he's the guy, by all means, pull the trigger. And, you know, we'll just see where it goes. Because, I mean, worst case scenario, they end up without a quarterback in this draft, and then they're going to take somebody, but you end up without one of these guys that you think has a legitimate shot of being a good NFL quarterback. I mean, I would rather them take Ryan Mallett in the second than, come out of this draft with another sixth-round guy, the guy from Idaho or whatever that has visited. I mean, I would rather them, at least Mallett has the upside to be an NFL quarterback, where if you end up with one of those guys, you've got Rusty Smith part two on your roster, and you pray that he develops into something, but the odds aren't real good.
So I mean,
I don't know. We'll just wait and see how it all plays out. And then a lot of it's also going to determine on whenever free agency does get started, if it ever does get started. They're going to bring in a veteran regardless. Depends on who that guy is. If he's a guy that can come in and play for a couple of years while you let whoever you draft develop, or if they can't get a guy that they think is even better than the rookie they have, then you're looking at a training camp battle. So a lot of that stuff's going to play out, and it just sucks for the Titans that the lockout is when it is, and the timing, we talked about it before, but the timing couldn't be worse for the Titans.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, this the Brady v. NFL case started today, and they're saying it's going to be, a week to 10 days before there's a judgment issued on that injunction, and we just all got to be, praying double time and crossing our fingers that injunction goes through and they're able to start free agency and trades pretty quickly thereafter. Because, we've said it 1,000 times, but it just keeps bearing repeating that if it's going to help the Titans so much if they can either A, address that through free agency and trades first, or at least B, have some other teams address that position so that there aren't so many quarterback hungry teams, in the draft. Maybe we get a little better pool to pick from with that second pick, if that's the case. If you've got, if Cincinnati gets something worked out, if, Seattle gets something worked out, if, some of these guys that are moving around end up getting new homes, then all of a sudden they might not be looking for another quarterback.
Yeah, and again, like you're saying, I mean, that's even everything else being taken out of the equation. If you could at least have a team be able to trade for Kevin Kolb or something like that, that would take away a team needing a quarterback in this draft, that would really help. But, I mean, every day that passes is looking less and less likely that anything like that's going to end up being the case before the draft. So looks like we're going to be looking at, the team needs that we have now without anybody being able to take advantage of free agency. So we keep our fingers crossed that that's not the case, but I don't see really at this point any way that they get anything done in the next 3 weeks of the draft now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's pretty much all we got to cover for today. We'll look at doing another couple of these probably before the draft. And then, like I said, we'll post them on the site. I think August has looked into how we get them posted on iTunes, so we'll try to do that so people can subscribe there as well. But we appreciate you listening. Leave any comments that you have, any questions that you have, or whatever stuff you'd like us to discuss in future podcasts. You can just leave them in the thread that we ended up posting this in, and we'll be happy to get to them as much as we can. So for August, thanks as always for joining me, and thanks again for agreeing to do this.
Hey, it was my pleasure, and you guys keep listening in. We'll keep getting them better and better. This is kind of a process.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll sign this one off for now, but we'll talk to you again soon. And like I said, please give us feedback, anything that you want us to talk about, because we're going to be hitting a pretty dry spell. Once we get done with this draft, we'll also talk about around that, but then it's going to get pretty dry. So we'd love to hear your feedback on things that we can do better. And just like you said, keep listening, and we'll get another one done probably next week.
Tennessee, Tennessee, there ain't no place I